to try and get revenue on the audio only model anymore doesn't make sense. And that's where all those like UFO videos came from a couple of years ago. It was actually from the lead singer of Blink-182 working with the government. Weird as that is.
Stop, you're a high school teacher?
And I run into this thing though of like, you know, like you can like 80% of what somebody does, but then there's 20% that you're kind of terrified about.
Just what's going on? Like, are we headed for doom? Are we all screwed?
This is Aaron Cordovez Show.
Man, I feel like I've listened to at least maybe like maybe five of episodes of your podcast. Realistically, a while ago, like I remember you had, I think it was Dr. Tenpenny on about, she was talking about vaccines or something.
That was my first YouTube video that got taken down.
Oh, is that right? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we have Dr. McCullough is actually coming on back on next week. I don't put those episodes on YouTube anymore. Those go on Rumble only.
Right.
So that we protect ourselves. But I've been talking about a lot more, like, I try to say too much out of like the political side of things, because I think that gets a little, I don't know, abrasive. I try to talk more about like culture and like things that matter around that. Like, you know, like raising your family the right way, you know, like taking responsibility for your family. I did an episode I have coming out in a couple weeks on, I interviewed like YouTube's number one plumber. And we actually talked about like how the trades are like in a really big problem right now.
Yep.
And so that's like a really big cultural issue, right? Like, because if you look at the age of the average like working person in America is 44 years old. The age of the average tradesperson in America is 55.
And so how do you define a tradesperson?
So trades are like things you do with your hands. So like that would be like a plumber, that would be like a pipe fitter, electrician, construction. Like those are things you don't always go to school for. And, you know, like we're kind of in trouble if we don't have those things, like especially plumbing. Like the number one reason the bubonic plague happened is because we weren't cleaning our water. Like that's a huge problem.
Yep. Wow. Wow. Okay. So cool. So talking about issues in society, not just political, but just what's going on? Like, are we headed for doom? Are we all screwed?
I don't like to leave people thinking about doom, man. I like people to see like something can be done about it. You know what I mean? I think that's one of the number one things is like television scaring the hell out of us and everything else. I want people to be empowered. I want people to realize like, hey, there's these speed bumps. And if you want to play the game of life well, you need to at least know about them and be aware of them so you can plan properly. I think that's one of the bigger issues.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Makes sense. Okay. So let's just do a quick recap. Like just an idea. What is your goal with your podcast and your goal with your business, you know, overarching?
So with what we do, you know, like the number one thing we do is we do podcast placement. So we help people to find the right podcast, be great guests on them. And the podcast actually came first. So I started the podcast back in 2015. And wow. I started just as a hobby because I've been, my master's is in ancient history. So I was teaching high school. And
stop, you were a high school teacher?
I was a high school teacher 2 years, man.
No.
Like those first PowerPoints came out, like, cause I was terrible in front of people at that point in time. So those first PowerPoints came out and they were like 100 slides. And I'm like, all right, kids, prepare to be overwhelmed. And that was kind of like, I did that for 2 years. And then in 2012, my mom ended up having a really bad stroke and it made me look at a lot of different things. So like, I didn't know anything about business. I went through, you know, network marketing. I went through online marketing. I went through life insurance sales. And I've been a podcast fan since like 2009. And so I started a podcast as a hobby. It took off. We had 10,000 listens in our first month.
Wow.
And so for me, it was kind of like just learning more about the world, getting to, you know, connect with a lot of people I couldn't connect with previously because I now had this platform. And we wanted to help a lot of people to get out there and, you know, get seen and heard in the right way. And it's developed over the years because I think the thing that I've really seen that's bothered me is we kind of had this, you know, viewpoints that are acceptable and viewpoints that are unacceptable in the public world. And I think the problem is when you get to that level, like iron should sharpen iron, right? Like good ideas should force better ideas, right? Like, and if you can't talk about all viewpoints, then you can't get better ideas and better solutions.
So hey, like, isn't that why something like the Constitution was created? No, like the Bill of Rights. I mean, isn't that like, hey, we should be able to talk about things? Isn't that... shouldn't people just think about that as a normal basic right? That's what our country was made on. No, I don't know.
Yeah, but it's weird, man, because like here's the thing. Like, I don't necessarily, and this is a big reason we do what we do, like, I don't necessarily have to agree with 100% of what you say, but, you know, I'm going to fight for your right to say it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's really important. We've gotten into this world now where, you know, people decide, like, there's only certain viewpoints that are acceptable. And since they control kind of those wheels of power, they're only going to allow those viewpoints to get out. And I think because of that, like, sure, you know, for in the short term, you may be happy with the result. But in the long term, it hurts us as a society because we can't talk about really important things and we can't get to better ideas and get to better solutions. And, you know, when you have to look at every problem as a nail, then every solution is always going to be a hammer. We don't get to better ideas. And I think as a society, it makes us less intelligent. It makes us not work as hard.
Yeah.
It makes us, you know, not look at the value we can create for others. Yeah, it makes us less intelligent, but it also, like, it makes us not look for better solutions, right? Have you ever seen the movie Idiocracy?
Nope.
Oh, dude, you got to see Idiocracy. Okay. So, what the heck is the guy's name? It's the, on ESPN for a while, he was a character and they called him Terry Tate, office linebacker, the actor Terry something. I forget. Mm-hmm. He's a big, big muscular guy. So they make him president and he's Hector Macho Camacho. He's the president. And it's like the year, you know, 3000 or something like that. And people have just kind of been sucked into like, basically marketing messages for years. So they're at the point where they're watering their plants with Gatorade. And they're like, why are you watering your plants with Gatorade? And they're like, well, because it has electrolytes. They're like, what are electrolytes? Well, if people need electrolytes, it should be good for plants. So like, that's what happens. If you get to the point of you just have to accept information, not question it and not get to a better solution, you get to the point where you're watering your plants with Gatorade. And you're like, how did we get here?
Yeah. And there's probably a lot worse things that we're doing, you know, than watering plants or whatnot. But yeah, for sure, I get the idea. Okay, so let's, I guess I can officially start this. Jeremy Ryan Slate, the creator of Command Your Brand Media and Create Your Own Life podcast, went from literally high school teacher to reaching tens of millions of people across the internet, across speaking gigs. You've traveled all over the world speaking. Super glad to have you here on the podcast, Jeremy.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. I'm stoked to be here hanging out. I've followed and watched what you've been doing for a long time, man, and you're just making a massive impact on the world. So I just appreciate you taking the time out to chat with me today, man.
Awesome, brother. Absolutely. And you know what I like about, like, I've seen you on a couple times. I've seen your podcast. And I think one of the beauties of podcasting about doing this is that this is a conversation we may otherwise not be having, you know. When else would I come and sit down with you and having this chat, right? There's so many people on earth, so many people who have things to say that maybe don't get a chance to. And in creating a podcast, we're saying, hey, we're going to take conversations that we think are valuable and bringing them to other people. And that's why I started. I mean, I haven't made any money in this podcast. Hopefully, maybe I will one day, but that's not the purpose. I'm already personally rich. I have enough for myself, my family, but I'm doing this because I want conversations that are important to be reaching people in their car, in their houses, and wherever they need to. So your life is basically dedicated to getting conversations out, correct?
Yeah, because I think when great conversations can do a couple different things, right? You can see a side of people that maybe you didn't know, right? Like, I think when you get to see the different aspects of people, you can understand, like, you know, they're quirky or they're interesting or they're helpful. Or you can also see the other side of things. Like, maybe somebody doesn't have the best of intentions. So I think podcasts and conversations can help us with that. But I think at the same time, it's geared more towards people of like a growth mindset, like people that want to improve, people that, you know, want to create beautiful things in the world. And I think, as you said, you know, there aren't these opportunities if we don't have the ability to sit down with people like we do in this medium. And I think a lot of times this is something that even comes up when talking to clients is they always just think of the audience, which you should be to a certain extent, like thinking of the people listening and what they're going to get out of it. But at the same time, it's incredible networking opportunities to meet great people that you can do awesome things with. And I think that's what's really beautiful about podcasting. And it's kind of, where else can you have a 2 hour, an hour, depends if you're listening to my favorite podcast, Hardcore History, is 5 hours.
Wow.
So where else would you have these long form conversations where you can get into nuance? And that just really doesn't happen in media, where things are 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes. If you get 30 minutes, it's a big deal interrupted by a commercial. Mm-hmm. And I think it really allows us to develop ideas and get to something. And I think the thing that you're seeing is people are dying for humanity. And what they're actually getting out of podcasts is real humanity. They're getting real conversations, real ways people are. And because of that, they're just not really interested in traditional media anymore.
Yeah. And there's a, I think there's also a fork in the road where, you know, reading, I feel like reading, sitting down and reading a book has become a lot less common right nowadays than it was even when I was a kid, which wasn't that long ago. And let's say the TikTok generation of everything is half a second, 5 seconds, 10 seconds, right? You're getting into it where the attention span, people are going on. I saw this one video of this guy, like, he's watching TikTok and then he's like on this video game and he's like swiping and then doing this. And it was like a little kid. It must have been like a 7-year-old, you know? And I'm like, damn, like, what are we getting to? We have our attention spans are I wouldn't say they're dropping, but they're being pulled in so many directions. Mm-hmm. And you're being put into these things that are 5-7 seconds when you will not make a life-changing awareness change in a 3-second video. No matter how great that video is, it is not going to happen. And so there's this pull of really, really short kind of content. But then at the same time, podcasts and longer forms are also thriving. So how do you, like, why do you think these are both going on at the same time? That it's like longer is growing, but also shorter is growing. I feel like there's not really a clear path.
That's an interesting question, because if you look at it, I think number one, you have to go down to, like, when your attention gets dispersed like that, what does it mean? And when your attention gets dispersed, it's really hard to concentrate on one thing and, like, kind of create one really great thing. So I think ostensibly, like, being dispersed like that isn't a good thing, but it is a great way to grab attention. So when you're looking at, you know, like, be it YouTube Shorts, be it TikTok, be it a lot of these different things, I think those apps are so focused on short form content. That's where you're grabbing the attention. But to me, I'm seeing more growth in podcasts than I've ever seen before. I think there's like 3.4 million podcasts out there. So that's a lot of different podcasts out there. Now the top 5% are shows that get 100 listens or more. So that is kind of a very top heavy thing where you have to be on the right podcast. But we've seen Apple Podcasts does this kind of talking about their stats every year of where things are at. They've found that the average podcast episode that people are listening to about 80% of it.
Oh, wow.
So I think what you're seeing is people are using this discoverability to find things, but once they're engaged in it, they're hanging out for a really long time. And I think the thing that I've seen as well, just from my own listening experience, is you're usually doing something else. Mm-hmm. You know, this past week, I know you're in Florida. I'm here in New Jersey, where we still deal with, like, handling leaves and stuff like that. Yeah. So I have, like, you know, we've got a lot of land here. We got like 4 acres. And so for us, like, doing the leaves is like a thing. So I listened to 5 hours of, you know, a whole podcast series while I was working on the yard this weekend. And I think what you get is you get kind of a deeper experience with somebody. It creates a listening habit, right? Mm. Because that's where, like, podcast series that cover a single topic are great. So I got sucked into this one. It was called Alien State. And it talks about Tom DeLonge, who was the lead singer of Blink-182 back in the day, and how, like, interested he was in aliens. And basically he started this whole program with the government, like, researching it. And that's where all those, like, UFO videos came from a couple of years ago. Was actually from the lead singer of Blink-182 working with the government. Weird as that is. But
so
anyway,
wait,
like,
does that mean they put UFOs out there to make people have a reaction? Or what does that mean? How does that causing UFO videos?
So, well, he was researching it, and he wanted to find out, like, is this out there? So then he's, like, reaching out to all these different people in the government or whoever it may be. And actually, like, emails with him and the Clinton State Department actually came out in WikiLeaks, which I think is kind of funny. You see the lead singer of Blink-182. But anyway, like, the reason I mentioned that is because that was a 9-episode podcast series.
Wow.
And then because I'm doing something else that's long and extended, right? Like, I've done a podcast like that when I'm on construction projects, or when I'm working on something at the house, or when I'm doing a yard project like that. So I think you really develop a listening habit then. So then for me as that listener, I get through that entire series and I'm like, okay, where can I find more content like this from this creator? And I think that is the real difference. Is you're getting people that are, sure, they're doing something else, but they're really, really engaged and they have the time to be engaged in you. And I think that's the real value. So people that are commuting, people that are doing big projects, I always see podcast listening go up around the holidays because you're getting people that are driving to new locations for holidays. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot to be said about that. And also, I know for myself and my wife, we have listened to this one podcast series together that actually got me into podcasting called The No Agenda Show since 2009. And it's basically Adam Curry, who was a MTV VJ and actually the guy that invented podcasting, and John Dvorak, and they play news clips and talk about them. So that then becomes something that my wife and I then discuss to understand our world a little bit better. So I think there's so much ability to be engaged in it. I haven't myself been as sucked into kind of the short form content because it's just, to me, I'm more interested in depth. But I do think that is a lot of where the younger generation's going.
Yes. You mean toward short form? Or you mean toward podcast?
I think towards short form. Yeah, yeah. I think towards short form because it's, if especially with like, you know, TikTok and things like that, it's really where things are driving towards.
Yes, yes. So, okay. So now let's, you know, this podcast typically does involve a lot of people who sell e-commerce, but also people interested in business and money, right? Yeah. So could you shed light, you know, if you're open, your podcasting business, right? Kind of what is your revenue? Like, how is the business side of things going in this sort of industry?
Well, I guess if you want to look at the podcast as like kind of a separate entity from the business, they're kind of two things, I guess. For us, you know, people are usually with us for 6 months or a year if they're working with us as an agency, and then, you know, they pay a retainer for that. So we're working with anywhere from 30 to 60 clients a year to get them on like high visibility placements. And that's just as a PR agency. The podcast side of things, we're looking at a couple different things. The first is I have some really great health products I like that we actually talk about in the show. So one of them is Dr. Jason Dean's Brave TV products are really good. And we make a couple $1,000 a month with him just, you know, talking about affiliate products on there. Mm. We also have an affiliate deal with MyPillow. So every time people, you know, buy MyPillow and use my promo code, you know, we get revenue there. So we're getting, I'd say, a couple $1,000 a month in just that affiliate revenue. Now, the bigger thing that we're actually concentrating on, why I put so much attention on YouTube, is we get a lot of revenue share from YouTube. Mm-hmm. That's the number one way we actually monetize directly off of our content. And the CPM depends on what your like engagement's like on a video. Mm-hmm. But since we do a little bit more like cultural political stuff, the CPM payout isn't as high. So the CPM, I think, is like around $8. And then the RPM, or the revenue, so what you actually take from that, is usually around like $6. And that's per thousand. But, you know, we're taking home, you know, $3,000-$5,000 a month in just revenue from YouTube. So there's a lot to be found in that. And I think when you talk to a lot of podcasters, to try and get revenue on the audio only model anymore doesn't make sense as much mm-hmm, anymore mm-hmm. because discoverability is really hard. It is very hard to teach somebody how to go into a podcast app, find the podcast and listen to it. So in 2023, you need to be doing video. And frankly, of all the platforms out there, like, sure, I talk about controversial things. So I have Rumble as a backup, but my main platform I'm focusing on is YouTube mm-hmm. because the discoverability and the ability to get found is really, really good. So we've really been diving into that, and we're putting out 2 episodes a week there. We're putting out 3 shorts a day geared around those episodes to try and pull in more content, because you want to focus on the 2 different algorithms. The shorts algorithm and the standard algorithm are different. So for us, that's what we're really focusing on.
Okay.
I'm sorry if that was like kind of all.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
There's a lot.
So we're talking about like the podcast content only, you know, from what my basic math there I was doing, you're talking about maybe 10 to 15K a month on the podcast, but then your agency is generating quite a bit more, I'm assuming.
Right. And then the way that we do the podcast content, you know, when you're doing a podcast episode, you know, hey, everybody, welcome to this episode. Jeremy Slate, I'm the co-founder and CEO of Command Your Brand. And I kind of give my pitch at the beginning of every episode. So also the podcast itself
generates people.
helps to generate revenue. And then like as well, like when I'm going on a lot of big like cultural and political type shows, well, those are people we're going to end up working with as clients. So it ends up kind of being one hand washing the other, if that makes sense. Yep. We get a lot of business from me doing interviews.
All right, that makes sense. So now one thing about podcasts and something I find extremely valuable, once you have that listening, the following, and you have some viewership, I'm assuming getting a meeting with somebody that you want to have a meeting with becomes a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
Have you?
No, absolutely.
How is it you booking people or having a conversation that you thought you would have never been able to have a conversation, how easy do you find it is now?
So that's the social proof is vital, because I will tell you in the beginning, like I had to fight for them. Like I when I finally interviewed Grant Cardone, I had pitched them like 7 times, and then I actually ran into him on the street in New York City, which was wild. And then we ended up, yeah, sure, I'll do that podcast. Like that was something that took a lot of follow up. Now, the thing that's changed is when you're reaching out, I've learned a lot better process. Mm-hmm. Like there's kind of a hierarchy of reaching people. The first is if you can get in touch with the person, you're in good shape. Their personal assistant's, you know, not as good, but it's better. Their publicist is even further outside of that. And then once you get into like, you know, somebody that books your stages and stuff like that, they're never going to book an interview for you. So understanding the hierarchy is important. But then the social proof of, you know, like, hey, I've interviewed XYZ, like, especially like in the political space, I have, you know, like people like James Lindsay I've interviewed, or Roger Stone. So when I'm saying names like that, it's very easily an instant yes. So that's been the big difference, is once you kind of have some of that social proof, it's very easy to get other people that may not be familiar with you, but are familiar with people you've interviewed to get on board. Now, I found as well that when you're trying to like get one of those conversations, the thing that can be really tough is everybody's used to kind of sending the same like boilerplate pitch, mm-hmm. of, you know, like something that's, the communication isn't meant for the person receiving it. So I've found very often, though, it takes a lot more time. When I'm reaching out to a guest, I will tell them the very particular reason I want to talk to them and what I want to discuss with them. So because of that, like maybe it takes me more time to create that pitch, but I have a better reason of, you know, a better way of getting a yes. And then, you know, that social proof, once that builds, like that's how I'm getting booked on stages. That's how I'm doing all these different things. Like we don't reach out for stages. That generally is an inbound thing. So, you know, there's a lot of different things that's improved over the years, but like the more people you interviewed and the more social proof and the more positioning you've grabbed from that, the easier it is to get those things.
Nice. Nice. Okay. So tell me, what are some topics that, or let's start with maybe just one, that you think should be being talked about? People want to be talking about it, but it's either censored or people are not able to talk about it, that you, you know, will push or want to talk about.
I think one of the biggest ones out there is health. Because I know right now, the YouTube just did a partnership recently with, I'm trying to remember the body name, not the CDC, because the CDC is federal. What's the national health body?
National Institute of, or,
International, WHO, World okay, Health Organization. Yeah, okay. So now if content isn't approved by the World Health Organization, they're taking a lot of it down and censoring, even if these people are doctors. Mm. And I think the problem is we should have the ability to think about how we want to get treated. We should have the ability to talk about these different things, because otherwise we're kind of forced into certain solutions. And I think that isn't fair either, because you're letting people make decisions with faulty information. And I think that's a really, really big problem. So I think number one is health. And that is the thing that's been censored the hardest on YouTube. Mm. The other thing is when you look within politics, something that's been very, I guess you could say, spicy at the moment is talking about like gender roles and gender identity. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, especially as a parent and somebody wanting to take care of my kids, I think that's a really important thing. But culturally, like if you have viewpoints like that, like, you know, like I have an episode where we talked about the role of a father and the role of a mother. And that episode got censored on YouTube because they said, hey, you can't do that. And I'm like, you're kidding me, right? Like, that's how I was raised. It doesn't make any sense to me. I think another thing.
Hold on, but what part of the episode? What part of the episode do you think was censored and why? Like, hey, a father should, provide for the family. And then you got censored. Or like, what do you think? What do you think it was?
That's the thing that's hard about it, man, is like, it would be really, I know it's, wouldn't be, they wouldn't want to do this because it'd help you, but it would, like, it'd be really cool if it'd be like, hey, this is the exact thing you said and we don't like it. Mm-hmm. Instead, it's the episode comes down and you get a blanket statement of why it came down and you got to figure out what the heck you did. So I think it like kind of puts you at effect rather than a cause. Mm-hmm. And I think that can be really difficult. So once again, that's why you have to have other platforms. Like we're on Rumble, we're on Odyssey, we're in BitChute, we're in different places just in case.
What about X and Twitter X?
That's the social platform that personally I use the most.
Okay.
It's not where my biggest following is, but it's the one that I personally use the most, because you can have open conversations and kind of get to better viewpoints on things. So that's been something I've used a lot.
Yeah, I've heard that they're, you know, adding the more revenue to the creators and everything. And I figured maybe those episodes, if you put them on X, maybe that could go somewhere. I don't know. Elon Musk has some big dreams and stuff, or big goals or ambitions, and he's saying how he wants that to be the search. Like, he basically wants X to replace YouTube. And I'm fine with it, but I don't know.
I'm fine with it. And I run into this thing, though, of like, you know, like you can like 80% of what somebody does, but then there's 20% that you're kind of terrified about. Like,
the microchips? Like
the thing that, I don't like the whole microchip thing that Elon Musk wants to do. But I also, like, he filed an SEC filing a couple months ago of where he wants to turn X into a payment system as well. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how much I like that as well. So it's just, there's a lot of things that you, like, the freedom of speech is good. It's good to be able to talk about ideas. But I think to just say, like, okay, this is Elon Musk and everything he does is right, that's also a little bit crazy.
Sure.
I think you have to be able to kind of look at the different aspects of somebody and say, well, that is good, that's bad, that's good, that's bad, that's kind of a gray area. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. That can be difficult.
Now, how familiar are you with WeChat, the China app?
I'm not familiar with it at all, but that's actually one of the number one reasons that concerns me about Musk, actually, because I interviewed Bhatia Unger-Sargon. She's the deputy opinion leader at Newsweek. Mm-hmm. And she was saying, if you look at, like, how... Number one, I don't have firsthand experience of this. This is just what she said to me. If you look at how he's interacted on U.S. social media, it's very much like a libertarian type of idea, you know, talking about freedom. She says in China, he's doing similar things on WeChat, but through the eyes of, like, you know, China's good and we love China. So that's one of the things I worry about. And you also look at kind of where his Tesla showroom is close to where the Uyghur camps are. That's kind of concerning.
What is
a
Uyghur camp? I don't know what that is.
So the Uyghurs are Chinese Muslims, uh-huh. And right now in China, they're basically putting them in, like, these concentration camp style areas because the Chinese government does not like them.
The Muslims.
And so it's kind of a problem, but there's a lot of people that aren't really broaching the subject if they're making a lot of money in China. And Musk is one of those ones that he actually built his latest Tesla showroom in China was actually built near... one of these large Uyghur camps, and it kind of puts you in a situation like, well, why isn't he saying anything, and why would he build something there? So as I said, there's good things and there's bad things, and I like the ability to have freedom of speech and talk more and kind of get to better solutions. But I think to put 100% of your trust in somebody also when they're a public figure and you don't really know them puts you in a little bit of a dangerous place.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. So, and I do a lot of business in China, right? And they produce goods. Like, a lot of the hard goods in the U.S. are produced by China. I'd love to produce some stuff here in the U.S., but it is pretty hard. It's the techniques and stuff that they have versus what we have is not really the same. When I first started my physical products business in 2015, I spent at least a month, like, every day looking for factories here in the U.S. that would produce a lemon squeezer, because that's what I felt like I should sell. And I couldn't find one. There is not a single factory of lemon squeezers to my knowledge. And I've searched everywhere. We sell the number one lemon squeezer, you know, and it can't be found. And could it be made? Sure. But the, you know, labor costs, there's so many reasons why it'd be hard. And hey, maybe it should be easy. But anyway, the point is, China makes a lot of stuff. Yes, they have a lot of things that are not ideal, right? Freedom of speech and things of this nature. But yeah, I mean, I haven't personally.
I'm not saying it's much better here. Like, I'm, right. You know,
that's
I'm,
a good
I'm,
point.
Like, I'm, you know what I mean? I think it's all a viewpoint thing too. Like, it's, but yeah. Anyway.
So what I was gonna say about Musk and China was, like, I have factories over there, and hey, I probably have a factory next to some place and something, and, like, I haven't called out China because China is not one entity, right? It is so many individuals that are in the government. There's probably hundreds of thousands of government employees, you know, a lot. And there's going to be, hey, if you say I'm not going to work with China at all because of these few people, I just don't know. I don't know if that's a workable solution. I don't know what you would have, like, Musk do, let's say. You say, hey, China, you have human rights abuses. Well, every country has human rights abuses, right? China's such a general overarching idea that, like, I don't know what you're supposed to do at that point.
No, I do see what you're saying, because it puts you in a tough solution. That's just, I just want to see people do well, man. And it just bothers me when I don't see it, you know?
Yeah. People often ask me, hey, can I sit down with you one-on-one? Let me pick your brain, get whatever info from you on how to sell on Amazon, how to get started. Well, guess what? You can sit one-on-one with me for more than 3 hours on my mini course, aaroncordovas.com/start. And I will sit down with you one-on-one and give you all the info that I think you need to get started on Amazon. If you're having success on Amazon, you probably have cash to invest, right? The next level after making it big on money is investing. You have to be able to invest to get really wealthy. I've created a fund where you can put your money into Amazon brands. And because e-commerce is growing, Amazon is growing, and you have operators who know what they're doing, your chance of success on your investment is pretty high. I've created this fund because I do not want people to get burned, and where I can put my own money alongside of your money to invest in the best brands that exist right now. Go to aaroncordovas.com/invest. If you want to find out more, and you are an accredited investor, do you know the median income of the United States?
You know, I don't have that number for you. Do you happen to know what it is?
I know it's really low. I don't know the number.
Like, I would say like maybe $40,000. Is that what it is?
Yeah, probably somewhere in that range. That's my guess. And or average or median, all over that is in there. And I find people doing well, right? Like, I think there's a financial grip that governments of the earth have on people. And when you can control somebody's life because they are broke, right? You either provide the food stamps, you provide whatever, you provide things that they need that you have convinced them that they cannot take care of themselves. And I find that's where a lot of the problems happen, is because if you are reliant on the government, you will take whatever they will give to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I talk about business. And I'm like, guys, you can start your own brand. You can start your own business. You can sell some products. You can go into business and do something for people, and you could do fantastic. And I've created several millionaires just by telling people to start selling and start making a brand and start making products, because people want that, you know. Not always does people want someone want to be sold something, but if you have a product available that's better than another one, a lot of times you make sales. And so that's what I talk about. And I do believe a lot of freedom comes from being able to provide stuff yourself. And in this world, that does mean money. Mm-hmm. If you cannot make money, you are more reliant on everybody and everyone else.
Mm-hmm. 1,000%, because, you know, like when you look at it, like security is in your own ability to produce and your own ability to create things. And when you don't have that, you know, you are reliant on someone else. And I think that's the reason I'm talking about education so often. If you look at it, one of the biggest problems with education is we give kids theory for years. Mm-hmm. We don't make sure they actually understand the information they're getting, and then they're getting no application whatsoever. So they get out of school with, you know, a whole bunch of debt, which is usually more than a house, and they're not trained in such a way to start a business. If you look at the where our education system came from, our education system came from the Austro-Hungarian model, which was to create soldiers, which was then mixed with the Industrial Revolution here in the US. So you either want to make soldiers or factory workers. Neither one of those two things start a business. And I think if you look at it, one of the number one things that's missing for your regular worker, but it exists in the trades still. When I say the trades, you know, like plumbers, pipe fitters, electricians, people like that, is the idea of apprenticeships. If you wanted to do something for a period of time, you would work under that person, you would get the skills, you would find out how to do it, and then eventually you'd go hang up your own shingle. And we're really missing that. We're getting kids that come out of school and they don't know how to do anything with this information they've been given that they may not understand anyway. So I think if you get back to it, the biggest thing missing is apprenticeships. And I always compare this to the seminary, right? When somebody's going to go into the seminary, people think it's like, oh, you go to the seminary to be a priest. Well, there's actually two reasons. The first is you want to be a priest. The second is to decide, do I really want to be here? Mm. And that's what an apprenticeship serves. You work under somebody that is good at a career or a master at a career for a period of time. You get some skills, And it also helps you decide, do I want to do this? So I really think they're after high school, which probably shouldn't be 4 years. It should be shorter. There should be some sort of apprenticeship for everybody where we decide, like, you know, it helps us to decide different careers and get some skill sets. And then if you do need college, then you go do that, right? Like you go, if you want to be a doctor or a lawyer or whatever, you need those things. But there's a lot of jobs, like if you look at like marketing, for example, most of the marketing things that you're going to learn in college are probably from 20 years ago.
Yep. Or from more.
People that yep. 20 or more, and that you're learning from people that probably weren't successful at anyway. That's why they're teaching in a college. So like to me, like that hands-on practical experience, like I don't know about you, but like most of what I've learned from about marketing and public relations and things like that is sure from reading the right stuff, but it's been from doing it, man. It's been from experience. And I feel like there's so much that you can learn from the experience of doing things. And it's just, it's being robbed from our kids now. Like we're not getting that.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think that when, I love the idea of apprenticeship, by the way, because then you can find out, like if instead of 4 years of school, you spent 1 year under an electrician, 1 year under a marketing person, 1 year with a chiropractor, what, you know what I mean? At that point, be like, damn, I for sure want to do this because I love this, you know?
When you get paid to do that too, rather than giving somebody else money.
That's right, that's right. And nowadays, what's crazy in an e-commerce world, I have met multiple kids, 19 years old, 20, 18, that have sold tens of millions of dollars online. Tens of millions.
Yes.
And you go, dude, that guy did not learn that in school. No teacher in any school could teach that person how to do that. But they're just given an opportunity and said, hey, go do this. And one guy on the podcast, actually funny, that podcast, the episode didn't record, the person's in it was bad. But the guy, he was saying that he was living in Kenya and he wanted a video game. And his father told him, I'm going to pay half of the video game. You figure out the rest, right? Mm-hmm. And the kid ended up finding it for half the price on like some website. And he's like, well, I can do it now. So he found it. But then he said, hey, if I can find it for half the price, then I can make that money. So then he sells it at the full price. And then he starts doing that. And the next thing you know, he sold like $11 million by the time he's 19. You go like, so there's that, go and do it. Like go and spend the time. And, you know, a lot of times people don't have to be taught. We can know things just by knowing them. It's like common sense. Yes. If you can find something for half the price, you can sell it for higher. That's not, you don't need to be taught that kind of thing. Hey, you can go and search. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that we will know that we do not need to be taught. And if you agree, hey, I need to be taught how to do business because I don't know it, you've just admitted your ignorance and you're saying you don't know. When in fact, maybe you do know. Hey, maybe you do know, right? Maybe you don't have to be taught. Maybe you could just go and figure the thing out because you are a smart individual who can observe and find out what people need. So anyway, I think that's a big issue people are facing.
Well, I think as well, like by telling people that, you know, you kind of keep needing more to order to do, you're making an effect and not cause. Mm-hmm. And I think when I look at what I talk about, when I look at the content I do, when I look at what I do for work, like I'm all about how can I make people more effective and more causative? And I think we should be that same way in education because I was a competitive power lifter for years. Like, how did I learn how to do it? First of all, not hurting myself, which is important. But number one, like learning a lot of the techniques around like, well, how do you do this? And how do you train for this? And how do you work with this? And how do you, like, you can't go to school to learn how to do that. It's experiential. If you look at even a lot of technology that exists now, like probably colleges aren't even teaching about AI yet. And when they do eventually, it'll be like, you know, GPT-1. By the time you get out, like what's even being used is going to be nothing like what's been done. So to me, I think you'd be so much better served taking whatever money you would put to a four-year education and putting it into paying for the different apps, subscriptions, and things like that. You need to learn how to market online because that's the direction we're going. I think there's so much opportunity now than any other time in history, man. Like we've never been this connected before. We've never had this ability to make money. We've never had this ability to make impact. We never had this ability to talk to anyone. I think we are at such a wonderful time in history if we can just grab opportunities and learn from them.
Yep, I agree. And a lot of those opportunities I find are not in a college. I mean,
yes.
I was just thinking about this right now as you were talking, because I was going to ask you, why do you think people are so drawn to colleges, universities, so many billions of dollars, right? The student debt, I want to say, is 1.9 trillion, 1.6. It's trillions. There's more in student debt than there are in the entirety of credit cards in the United States. Like,
yes.
Why is this thing still so appealing to so many of the masses going to the college? Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's a couple different things. I think one, the simplicity of it is like everybody wants their kids to do better than them.
But
right?
But better than them, but why college? Like that concept, yes, they should do better than me, but why does that fit in with college?
Oh, well, I'm just gonna tell you from my life experience. So my mom had a full ride to NYU and then ended up not going because her dad got cancer senior year of high school. So she didn't go to college and became a hairdresser. Mm. My dad tried to go pro in baseball, got hurt and didn't go anywhere. So he actually didn't finish high school. Mm. So for them, like the ultimate was going to college, mm-hmm. right? And like, I don't know who they got that idea from. I don't know where they picked that up. But for them, raising me, it was like, you know, if you don't go to college, you're not going to be anybody. Mm-hmm. And my questions were always like, I don't know, like, Dad, you're pretty successful. You started the machine shop at a company. You worked your way up to the VP of running that company and you didn't have any college. Like, I would always ask them these questions. Like, you're telling me you're not successful, Dad? I think you're pretty darn mm-hmm. successful. You make over six figures for somebody that didn't finish high school. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
But I think the problem is like, this is kind of what's been pushed out and yes. parents are continue. You got to do this. You got to have this, you got to go there. And then the money becomes so like, quote unquote, easily available, right? Like, but kids don't understand how money works and they don't understand how interest works and they don't understand how loans work. And that's the problem is those are things that aren't being covered in school. They should be covered in high school. Like you should have to take a basic money management class. So then you're getting into these loans that you cannot get rid of by bankruptcy, by the way.
Yep.
That student loans compound daily and the percentages on a lot of them are pretty high. You know, they used to be low years ago, but they're pretty high. So they get pulled into this system and then the whole system is set up to just continue building itself. You have these, I think it's Harvard University has one of the largest endowments in the country. So it's like you look at these colleges are huge. They're getting government money to pay kids to go to school. So it's just the system keeps funding itself and nobody looks outside of the box and says, huh, do I need that? Mm-hmm. Because it's become so acceptable if you have to have it. Like if you don't have that college degree, nobody's going to interview you. Well, I don't know about you, but I don't care about anybody interviewing me, man. I'm going to go create some opportunities for myself. Like they don't have to hire me. I will get myself hired or create something somewhere.
I have never looked at someone's education. When I'm hiring, I do not look. And in fact, it's possible, like if someone has a degree, I kind of like, well, why do they do that?
Yeah.
That's
I have a master's degree I don't use.
Yeah. I
have a master's degree I don't use.
Yeah. So I'll tell you my answer.
Yeah.
I think the level of propaganda is so high. Now, I do think there are valid uses of college. In fact, there's a guy who I follow. His name is Mike Beckham, CEO of Simple Modern. And he has a lot of good things to say about college. And he learned some stuff there. But he also had a bit of a, I would call it, of an unorthodox or not a total standard. Like in that specific college, they had a class and it was industry leaders talking. Similar, Phil Knight from the Nike, he had a class which was very bizarre. But it was like in university, people would come in, experts, and teach. Not the university mm-hmm. professors, but it was experts. And so I think there is in some cases with so many teachers and the industry being so large, there are going to, you'll be inevitably find things inside of it that are good. But I think there mm-hmm. are far and few in between. Anyway, I think the level.
Well, and I had a weird college experience personally.
Oh yeah. Tell me.
Well, no, like, cause I don't recommend anybody do college like I do, but I guess it helped me. Like I got to my senior year and they're like, you know, if you take this one class, you can be a double major. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll be a double major. And then they're like, you know, if you really were paying attention, you took these other two classes, you could have been a triple major. Like I just took things for like, how interesting is this to me and how usable is it to me? Those were the classes I took. And it ended up like apparently getting me to the point where I could graduate for different things.
Nice. And I think that if you're doing it to interest, and most people that go, I think the majority, what I found, they will not say, hey, this was a bad idea. Because you always believe in every moment you're doing the right thing. This thing mm-hmm. works for me. You decided to go. In that moment, in that time, it was the best thing for you. And we operate like that our whole lives. We always believe we're doing the right thing. So to go back and say, hey, was that a mistake? I think it's not a good conversation to have. Because your life, that you did go to college, that was part of your life. So to go and try mm-hmm. to tell someone, hey, that was a bad choice, I think is the wrong approach. Instead, it's mm-hmm. before they go to college and saying, hey, is this the choice you want to make? And I pay particular attention in movies, watching any sort of movie, I would say the vast, vast majority really idolize the college. There's a lot of college, how great it is, and it's amazing. Like, and for me, that is propaganda. What is showing up on the movies that you're watching? If you pay attention to it, what are they always pushing? And typically, it's a story of, and I could name various movies, but the idea is pushed, right? When do you see it? You see it in movies all the time. You see it in I don't know, from your parents, they saw a movie, then they talk about it. Yeah. They went to college, so they're going to reinforce that idea with you. So I think it is a machine that self-propagates itself, and there's no particular ending. And in fact, if all the colleges could be improved and I'll have better classes, or that would be fine too. I don't think colleges should be taken over, but I do think there is a lot of outdated ideas and also vested interests in college, right? Because and if you want to have a propaganda machine, the easiest place to go to is college, because people are there to learn and they're going to be there many hours every day. Where else would you go? That's the easiest place to go.
Well, I think there's two things to that. I think the first is, like, you know, just like you said, like what they're learning, like there's just so much application missing. Like you have to get the theory of something, but also the application of it. And I think that is the single biggest thing. Like, we should have more practical learning. Because if you're doing something, you're saying like, oh, okay, I learned the theory on this, but now in doing it, I can see I actually don't understand it. And I think that is one of the number one things, is having the actual, like, practical experience of it. So I think that we're just missing that, man. And there was another point I was going to make, and it suddenly just popped out of my brain. So I was going to say something really cool and profound, and now I don't remember it.
It's all good, all good. Can you learn, you mentioned about the tradespeople, right? There's the average age of a tradesperson, 55, versus average age of American workers, 44. So they're kind of almost becoming extinct, so to speak. Can you learn that in a college, or you don't learn that in college?
I don't think most trades don't go to school. Like I know for me, when I was in high school, college, and also in grad school, I worked for a house painter while I was going to school, and that's how I paid for a lot of stuff. And that was one of the single best experiences I've had in my life, because number one, anytime my wife wants something fixed, she knows I know how to fix it. You know, number two, it taught me the value of hard work. And we've kind of lost, like, the separation between work and its actual value. Mm-hmm. We've gotten to the sake of work for the sake of work, or, you know, just value for the sake of value. And what we have to actually see is the value in the work that we're doing. And I think when you're doing a trade, you get that, right? Like, because you're done with a project, you can look at that project and say, wow, that looks great, and look what it's accomplished. And there's a disconnect from that when in other areas of life. But I really, you go to a trade school if you want to do that, but that's applied learning a lot of times. And then you have an apprenticeship where you work under somebody for, I was talking to a plumber a couple days ago, and he was saying, I think for like 4 or 6 years, you have to work under a plumber before you can even be a master plumber. So that's a lot of experience you have to have before you can even go start a business, but you're getting experience. And I think that's, you know, something really valuable. Here's the other point I was going to make that has popped out of my brain before. When you have people going to school for as long as we have people going to school, and this is not saying that childhood is a bad thing, but it expands childhood. Right? Like, you have people that are kids until they're 22, 23, 24, 25 years old, and they don't take responsibility then, right? If you look at, let's say, 100 years ago, you know, you had kids 15 years old going and getting jobs, right? Because
You needed Alexander the Great. I think Alexander the Great was like 17 when he conquered like a country. Or what?
338 BC, the Battle of Chaeronea was the first battle of Alexander the Great. He was 18 years old.
18. So, I mean, I agree with you. Childhood has been expanded way, way too long. And yeah, what was the average lifespan though, you know, a while back, right? That's also a difference. Gosh. You know,
I don't know. Like, you know, Alexander the Great died at 33 years old.
Yeah, so,
like,
I think that was pretty common.
It wasn't like he lived very long.
Yeah, because you had to take advantage. You kind of had to seize the day. You're like, okay, this is halfway through my life, you know? Like, you can't have a midlife crisis, because by the time, you know, you're midlife when you're 17.
Yes.
But now I feel like, yes, you're right. Childhood has been expanded. We're being babied for longer. And yeah, it's not uncommon for someone to be like, okay, I'm still living with my parents at 24, 25, when literally other people like could have conquered entire countries by then, you know, done massive things with their life. But it's not for lack of skill. Beethoven wrote a symphony at like age 7. No, he was writing his first songs at like 5. So it's not that we can't, it's an expectation.
I think if you force somebody into being responsible and like they're in a situation where like they got to figure some stuff out, people grow up really fast and they figure out some really cool solutions. But I think like when you don't put somebody in that position where there's kind of no fail safe anymore, you know, they're not forced to grow and they're not forced to learn skills and they're not forced to get better at something.
Yep. I agree. How many kids do you have?
I have two and we have a third on the way.
Oh, so you have a third
on the way. I'm outnumbered, man.
Wow. That's amazing. So, and your oldest is how old?
My oldest is five. We just started homeschool actually. So she's just being able to start to read, which is really cool because she's been recognizing letters and words and stuff for a little bit. Her math skills are outrageous, but we're getting there. We started homeschooling like 6 months ago or so.
That's amazing. I have a five-year-old as well, and she, in fact, yesterday when we were going to bed, I was flossing my teeth, and I said, "Hey, Violet, like, why don't you read to me?" Right? Like, instead of me reading her, she says, "Okay." And she said, "The only book I can read is the ABC Mouse book." We have these physical books actually given to Doug Doring himself before he passed to my daughters. And it's a book and she reads the whole thing by herself and it's spectacular. Wow. So she's reading me a bedtime story. And it's so cool learning how to read. She's five. And man, it was such a great moment yesterday. Just Lisa reading me this book. It was called Dan and Jan. Okay, and it's a book. It's an ABC Mouse book. So if you don't have those books, I recommend like checking out because they're really phenomenal physical versions of ABC Mouse.
That's cool.
At five, it's interesting. You'll see the massive difference between five and like I have an 8-year-old. They grew up so much in these next like 3 years. So
yeah.
But are you having kind of like deep conversations already with your 5-year-old or how is that going?
We're starting to get there. My 3-year-old like isn't quite there on like what she understands yet. Like her, you know, diction is good. She's got some, you know, a bunch of words and stuff like that, which is great. But my 5-year-old, like she gets stuff, man. Like we've already had like life and death conversations, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's, you know, you get to the point where relatives and people like that get older and things. So you do have to kind of discuss some of these things. But she's really aware. And I think the thing that is shocking to me, because I also look at like, you know, I've seen a lot of kids at this point in time, like she's surprisingly considerate of others. And I think that's what's really interesting to me, because when like my 3-year-old, like she's not really there yet. And like her name's Emmy. So like everything is Emmy want or Emmy.
Yeah.
And she's not at the point where like she can consider others and see, you know, see that they exist yet and that they matter and that they have their own ideas and dreams and things. Whereas, you know, Addie is, she's five and she considers others and she thinks about the experience she wants them to have. And she thinks about like, so to me, it's been kind of cool to see that develop. And that it wasn't really there a little over a year ago to kind of see that now where she's thinking about others and their needs. And I think that's pretty cool.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Okay, cool. So what about you starting a physical products line? What are your thoughts about starting in the e-commerce world, selling, who knows, microphones?
My wife has been pushing so hard for that. And like, because she's like, you need to have your own line of microphones and you need to have your own line of headphones. And like, here's my problem, man, is I'm like a quality nut. So I'd want to have like the best quality, perfect microphone, which means that like I'd spend so much money developing, I'd never sell any.
Well, let me tell you something. Coming from this world.
Yeah.
And now we know we talked all this stuff about China, but let me tell you something.
Yeah.
For, I would say, this is my guess, 90 to 95% of brands that sell physical goods, okay, the expertise of the product itself is in China and not here. What that means is you don't need to develop the best microphone. You need to find the factory that already develops the best microphone and get them to give you a model. Because a lot of the engineering and all the stuff does happen over there. So for us, like we have this, like a coffee machine. Yes, we work on the coffee machine. We improve it. We do tweaks because we get customer experience that will change it. But I don't know how to make a motor. That's not my skill set, okay? But what I could do is I can be the user and I could try from 4 different factories and I'll find the best one. The actual engineering capabilities are not very often in the United States, right? General Electric, a lot of these big companies, their products are developed over there. And those factories are for sale, meaning they'll give you the product at the best quality for to put under your brand. So the job doesn't mean that you need to become the inventor and the engineer of microphones. What it does mean is you're going to put on your hat of quality control and you'll go check out 10, 12 different factories and one of them will have a fantastic microphone that's already done. And so your job is still there for the customer to vet the factories, but you do not need to develop the microphone. And so that's what I found. I mean, we have, again, the number one best-selling lemon squeezer, number one best-selling milk frother, Apple Core, silicone utensil. I have, I don't know, 12 number one bestsellers, right, online.
That's amazing.
And yeah, and in fact, I'm not an engineer, and I've developed a lot of these products. So like our utensil rest, I went and saw the ones in the market, and I go, they're flimsy. I grabbed it, and it's like floppy, right? I said, I need it thicker. So I go to the factory. I said, hey, make it thicker than everybody else. This one is, you know, over 90 grams. Mine's going to be 115 grams. So they went back and did it. And then I got it. And it's like, oh, it's not floppy. It's sturdy and nice. Let's order it. Now it's number one. And we sell over 1,000 every day. So you don't need to be an engineer. All you got to do is find the factories and tell them what you want. Because those guys have that trades know-how of building the product. So anyway, I would agree with you. Be the quality nut. Be the crazy person to make the best headphones. But talk to the factories because a lot of these guys do have fantastic quality and they don't know the marketing piece. And that's what a lot of US companies do. They handle the marketing piece and they just grab the products that are 90% there. You could do little tweaks to make it there, but you do not have to develop a product from the ground up. So I think you can do this and make the best quality, create your own life headphones ever.
My wife would be very excited about this conversation. She's been pushing about this for years.
Dude, I'll hook you up. I have a course I'm doing, how to start from zero. I'm starting a new brand from zero. Right, last year we did, I think, 78 million or so. This year we'll do 85 million plus. With all brands and everything, we'll probably hit the 100 million mark with all the ones we've acquired and ones that are not just kitchen. And I will tell you, that's the secret, is it's leverage. Other people develop these things and you go and find them and you have an important job because there are a lot of crappy ones too. There's a lot of crappy factories that make crap product. And a lot of those stuff ends up in dollar stores or end up in different markets or end up where there's no reviews or end up where it doesn't matter. So there is a market for crappy products, but your job will be don't work with those guys. Find the right ones, make little tweaks to it, and then you make something phenomenal. So absolutely. So my course, I'm starting over from zero, brand new from nothing. And I've been recording every single thing for the last, I think we started in September. The product will probably go live in January and everything's recorded. So I'll send that over to you so you have it, so you can see the process.
Amazing. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. Awesome, brother. Well, that's, we've used up this hour over here pretty rapidly. Glad to have you on. And then, hey, any final thoughts that you want to give my audience over here?
I would say, like, don't think that someone else has to give you the permission to, like, you know, have the intelligence or have the ability or have whatever. Like, go out there, get dirty, make some mistakes, build some skills. Like, I think that is the number one thing, because if you build those skills, you create those skills are yours. And it could be in this business, it could be in whatever future business you're going to create. You now have that ability to go do something. And I think that's where the magic is, man.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. That's right. No, you are your own person. You can make your own future. And you could create your own life.
Yes, sir.
Awesome, Jeremy. Oh, and then where should people find you?
Yeah, they can find me at commandyourbrand.com or if they want to check out anything on the podcast side, that's over at jeremyryanslate.com.
Sweet. Awesome, brother. Good talk.